Good morning, friends. Could I get you to close your eyes for a second and take a deep breath and hold in your mind's eye a picture of the person or people in your life thus far who have brought you the most hope? Thanks for doing that. I just wanted to start that way because sometimes we need that. We need to be reminded that hope is a big deal in our lives. So hello, I'm Russ St. Cyr. I have been here in Newburgh for about 14 years now. And I serve at George Fox as one of the university pastors. So I'm most comfortable speaking when there's like people up front that are really engaged and people in the back who are on their computers. So if you guys in the back could get on your computers and do homework, I feel much more comfortable. Could I get you to do something with me this morning? Also, I'm the pastor at Fox that makes people do uncomfortable things. So would you take your hand that you use to count with, like whenever you're doing math like I do, and put that hand behind your back and do a quick, very scientific survey with me? Maybe you can pull that up. So I'm going to have you in a second pull up a hand with one of these numbers on it. 5 means you enthusiastically agree. 4 means you agree. 3 slightly agree. 2 slightly disagree. You can see here there's no middle ground. And 1, let's see, 1 disagree. You can't see 0, but it says I could not disagree more. Okay? So let's practice. Let's do a practice round. Go ahead, that's the next slide here. So put your hand behind your back. And when I say go, pull it out. I appreciate NVFC pastors every day, not just on National Clergy Appreciation Day. Ready, set, go. Let me scientifically survey and interpret the results. Okay, that's pretty good. Nate, Leslie, did you see that? Okay, we're going to really do the survey now this time. So put your counting hand behind your back. And this statement is the next item. I am feeling so adventurous this morning. Ready, set, go. 5s, 3s, 1s in the front row. 2s, all right. Okay, put your hand back. Let's see, the next item is, I'm feeling so adventurous this morning that I'm up for going on a mission. Ready, set, go. I'm not even up for going on a mission. I'm going speaking. Okay. It's going down. We had started with 5s. Okay, hand behind your back. Here we go, next slide. I am feeling so adventurous this morning. I'm up for going on a mission to leave my home pew. Ready, set, go. I want to see you leave your home pew, so I'm going to go up. I'm seeing some zeros already. Okay, just a few more 100 questions. This one says, I'm feeling so adventurous this morning. I'm up for going on a mission to leave my home pew in order to find a conversation partner across the room. I'm already seeing zeros going up before I've said, ready, set, go. People are nodding, they're like not even pulling their hands out. Okay. You're almost done with the survey. Okay, hands back. Next slide. I'm feeling so adventurous this morning. I'm up for going on a mission. Leave my home pew in order to find a conversation partner across the room so I can evangelize them. This is like, why are you standing in solidarity with me, so many people? Hey, none of those signs, Andy. None of those fingers. Okay. Let's see, next slide. I might be done. Oh, let's do another. Let's go to the next one. One more. I am quite comfortable staying right where I am sitting just now. Thank you very much. Hands up. Okay. Based on the interpretation of these results, I'm going to have you stay seated. and find a conversation partner where you're seated. Next slide. I would love for you to talk with somebody next to you. If you were one of the, if you had a five up the whole time, please feel free to make your way across the room on a mission. I'd love for you to talk with your conversation partner for just this one partner. You don't have to pick multiple partners. You can talk with this one partner. I want you to share what, for a minute each, what are thoughts and feelings arise within you when you hear these words, mission, evangelism. Okay, on your marks, get set, share with your partner. Those of you on Zoom, if you want to participate, go right ahead and try to figure out how to participate. Maybe type some things in, friends on Zoom. Maybe make sure your partner got a chance to share. I don't know how many of you were raised in church. Man, I sure was. I was raised in a lot of church. So when I hear these words, I'm very conflicted. Yet I still am involved in them. In a career kind of way, which is amazing. Wanted to tell you about the first time I tried to hold the hand of a girl. I was 14, so my oldest is 14. It's about time I was her age, and I was made to go to this week-long church thing. I don't even know what it was for. I think it was just a week to make us feel guilty about everything. And it was a week-long thing. I think it was about how to go door-to-door and tell people about Jesus. And man, I'm on the big five personality thing. I'm pretty high on neuroticism. So that's not a fun activity to be doing, going door to door, talking to people about Jesus when I didn't really know him that much myself. At the end of this week, we were actually commissioned to go door to door and knock on, we were like little, knocking on people's doors, and we were supposed to, I think the word was evangelize, and we were supposed to tell them about Jesus, and I think the motivation was to get them to become one of us. And so, this most of my door knocking kind of went like this. It kind of went like, knock, knock, I'm getting not home, and I'm going to just run off really fast. And then one time, this lady, African-American, amazing lady, just said, come on in. And then me and my friend who were going door to door, we just stayed at her house as long as we could. And she was amazing. She started feeding us, and she started talking to us. And I look back on that as a really special time where I was evangelized by this woman who showed us hospitality, us little clueless, ignorant people. And then at the end of that week, some people told us there was this singer coming to our town in South Louisiana, and her name was Twyla Paris. Yes. You guys ever heard that lady? I didn't because she didn't rap, so I didn't know who she was. She didn't sing hip hop. So I was like, all right, because Lisa was going. Lisa was at this camp as well. Lisa Freeman was her last name. And everybody was like trying to get us to be a thing. You know, a 14-year-old thing. And we end up sitting at this, and I'll never forget, I don't know why this stuck with me, but she began to sing this song, How Beautiful, I don't know how the whole song goes, but I didn't know this till decades later. It came from the Bible. And it's like, how beautiful the feet of them who bring good news. And for some reason, the Holy Spirit came upon me. And during that song, I just all of a sudden looked down, and I was holding this person's hand while this song was going on. I don't know why that came up, but I never forgot it. Nothing came of it. We didn't become boyfriend, girlfriend, or anything like that. But it was all a part of this week where I was being invited / indoctrinated to the idea of evangelism, of we are called, we are commissioned, we are supposed to, because we have Jesus, we are supposed to bring Jesus to other people. And like I said, it wasn't until a lot long after that that I realized this song that Twyla Paris was singing was in the Bible. And it's in the book of Isaiah. And I just want to read it for a second. It says, "How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of the messenger who announces peace, who brings good news, who announces salvation, who says to Zion, 'Your God reigns.' Listen, your sentinels lift up their voices. Together they sing for joy, for in plain sight they see the return of the Lord to Zion. Break forth together into singing, you ruins of Jerusalem. For the Lord has comforted his people. He has redeemed Jerusalem. The Lord has bared his holy arm before the eyes of all the nations, and all the ends of the earth shall see the salvation of our God." What a powerful poem. And it obviously, in that day and age, they obviously thought it was a good thing to evangelize, a beautiful thing. They thought it was beautiful when people brought good news. I don't have that same feeling and thought when I hear the word evangelize or bringing good news because of my different situation. And so Nate had asked me to talk about this tricky word or tricky words of evangelism and mission. And I actually struggled with this for quite a while to try to be like, you know, Holy Spirit, what am I supposed to share about this? What am I supposed to do, or which direction? And it still, in my mind, is like, I don't really know how to unpack the complexity of those words, not only in my own life, but much less what all the Christians should do about these words. I am comforted by the words of here in Isaiah, and comforted by others in my own life who have brought me hope. I'm also afflicted with what I think of and feel of when I hear those words, mission and evangelism. Which brings another phrase from that childhood era, 14 years old. My dad used to keep quotes in his Bible, and I remember reading this one quote and hearing it a lot. That the gospel is supposed to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. You've heard this too. I didn't realize that this was not originally a Christian quote, but it was a guy named Finley Peter Dunn, who was a journalist, a writer, back in like 1900s, and he wrote this about people who write the news, who are journalists, who share the truth of what they are learning, experiencing, researching, and he said their job, their role as journalists, news bringers, was to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. It was only later in like 1940 that a Christian minister commandeered that phrase and said it's the business of the church to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. So in light of all this, this is the direction I ended up wanting to go. As a friend with you all, trying to figure this out myself and still feeling like there is something about gospel that is good, that people need. And there is something about people needing hope in our world that I still want to be involved in. But based on like such a vast difference between what I'm reading in this poem in Isaiah to where we are now with these words of good newsing people, I don't often know what to do. So what I have for you this morning is four simple overgeneralizations to share with you. For I want to use this overgeneralized phrase of comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable to describe four overgeneralized examples about how evangelism and maybe missions have become tricky words. I already shared in Isaiah 52, but let me just skip through Russ's overgeneralization observation number one. Let me skip to that. Back then, evangelism looked and it basically was more like this. The afflicted were comforting the afflicted. I would love to unpack this, but I found a video that unpacks it way better, and it's got animation, so that's much more fun to watch. So I want to show you a little bit of a video here that I think is pretty cool. I'm supposed to stop that and push that.
There's this beautiful poem. It's in the book of Isaiah.
The city of Jerusalem has just been destroyed by Babylon, a great kingdom in the north. And all of these Jewish people, they've been sent away into exile, but a few remain in the city. And they're left wondering, what just happened? Has our God abandoned us?
Right, because Jerusalem was supposed to be the city where God would reign over the world to bring peace and blessing to everyone.
Now, Isaiah had been saying that Jerusalem's destruction was a mess of Israel's own making. They had turned away from their God, become corrupt, and so their city and their temple were destroyed.
Yeah, everything seems lost.
But the poem goes on. There's a watchman on the city wall. And far out on the hills, we see a messenger, and he's running towards the city. He's running and shouting, good news! And Isaiah says, how beautiful on the mountains are the feet of those who bring good news.
Beautiful feet?
Yes, the feet are beautiful because they're carrying a beautiful message.
What's the message?
That despite Jerusalem's destruction, Israel's God still reigns as king, and that God himself is going to one day return to this city, take up his throne, bring peace.
And the watchmen sing for joy because of the good news that their God still reigns.
Now in the New Testament, we find this same phrase, the good news. It's the Greek word euangelion, and it's also sometimes translated with the word gospel.
And so when Christians say, do you believe the gospel, they mean, do you believe the news?
But not just any news. In the Bible, this phrase is always about the announcement of the reign of a new king. And in the New Testament, the gospels use this phrase to summarize all of Jesus' teachings. They say that he went about proclaiming the good news of God's kingdom.
So Jesus saw himself as the messenger, bringing the news that God reigns.
Yes, but the way that he described God's reign, it surprised everybody. I mean, think, a powerful, successful kingdom that needs to be strong, able to impose its will, able to defeat its enemies. But Jesus said the greatest person in God's kingdom was the weakest. The one who loves and who serves the poor. And he said that you live under God's reign when you respond to evil by loving your enemies and forgiving them and seeking peace. This is an upside-down kingdom.
Now Jesus...
All right. We'll pause it. So, as you can see, it originally, or back then, it looked a lot more like the afflicted, those who were under duress, under stress, challenged, tormented in the unjust situation, would make huge sacrificial efforts to bring comfort to others who were afflicted and in their situation. Like running 600 miles in the sand desert to deliver a message so that people didn't give up. To deliver a message. It also is fascinating to me that this word, euangelion, evangel, so we get evangelical, so we get all these words. This gospeling, it really was first and foremost a political word. It was a propaganda word. Like we're going to spread the news that there's a new winner. A new political reign is going on. Someone has won a battle, and we need to go tell those who thought they were going to lose, that they have hope. And it was something that was brought all the way to the New Testament, and Jesus and the new Christian movement commandeered this word, euangelion, gospeling, for what they were up to and what Jesus was promoting and proclaiming as this new kingdom, this upside down kingdom, this kingdom that is not dominated by what is dominating human civilization throughout time. It's a new way. New things are possible. Don't give up hope, because Jesus is the new king on the scene. And then he commissioned his disciples to go and propagate this gospel, this euangelion. And essentially they became evangelists, euangelionists. And then they wrote, later we have books in the Bible called Gospels because of that. So there was this movement. This, my overgeneralization is that the afflicted, the original use of this concept and activity was that the afflicted comforted the afflicted. Brings us to overgeneralization number two for me, is inadvertently what would happen often was that the afflicted would afflict the comfortable with this message. Let's keep watching this little video. The rest, the second half, it kind of shows that.
Also said that this kingdom was arriving with him.
Yeah, so for example, there's this really interesting story where there's a high-ranking Roman officer, and he comes to Jesus begging him to heal his servant. And he even calls Jesus his Lord, acknowledging that Jesus is his authority. Jesus praises this man for recognizing what no one else yet had, that not only was Jesus announcing God's kingdom, he was the king.
And so the word gets out that this Jewish man from Galilee is talking and acting like he's the king of Israel. He's appointing 12 disciples, which are an image of Israel's 12 tribes. He's healing people, forgiving people their sins.
And all of this so threatened Israel's leaders that they finally decided to have him killed. And Jesus let them.
Yeah, which is a weird thing to do if you're trying to become king.
That's right. But for Jesus, this is what had to happen. Jesus saw the sin and the devastation of his people Israel just one small part of the entire human condition. How all of humanity has rebelled against God, resulting in the tragedy and devastation of our whole world. So how is God going to bring his reign over such a world? Jesus believed it would be through an act of sacrificial love for his enemies. This is why in the Gospels, Jesus' crucifixion is depicted as his enthronement as the king of the Jews.
Yeah, he receives a crown. He also receives a robe.
He's exalted up, not onto the throne, but onto the cross.
How beautiful are the feet that bring good news.
How beautiful are the feet that bring good news. So that's back then. Euangelion, gospeling, good newsing back then. In its original roots, it looked like the afflicted class, the group that was under the pressure the most, was either comforting the afflicted, or inadvertently, they also afflicted the comfortable, just because what they were up to was threatening to the powers that be, to the people that had it going the way they liked it. Fast forward to since then, and this is overgeneralization number three. Since then, somehow evangelism, euangelioning, has become a little more of the comfortable comforting the comfortable. This is my experience growing up in lots of church. It was when people said, man, that guy really preached the gospel today. What I heard them saying was, he comforted us, all of us that were already on the inside, all sitting in the pews, all knowing what we wanted him to say, he said it. And we felt better about ourselves because of the way he said it and how strong he said it. And man, if those outsiders would just hear this, right? That's a lot of my experience. I don't know what your experience is. But it just kind of seems a little bit different than the original experience. So here we are, as a preacher's kid, seeing people called evangelists coming through church constantly. And I got the privilege of eating lunch with them constantly afterwards. And hearing what they were like when they weren't on the microphone, and seeing what they were dressed like, and seeing the things they would joke about, and hearing the things that really matter around those lunch and dinner tables. It didn't quite match for me as a kid growing up. I didn't buy it. a lot of the time. I grew up in the era of the 1980s. I remember distinctly being in a hotel room and my sister, oldest sister, who was the first one to kind of go to an accredited college for our family, calling in tears, saying, look at the TV. And we look at the TV and this guy named Jimmy Swaggart was crying and confessing that he had sinned, because she was crying on the phone because she was at Jimmy Swaggart Bible College. And she was like, what do I do? They had put a lot of their trust in what this man was about. That's the era and what I remember. Like the comfortable class, preaching in a way that comforts the already comfortable. The other thing, and probably the worst thing that would happen since then, is my overgeneralization number 4. The comfortable would often afflict the afflicted with the message. I don't think we got to look through a lot of history to know this has happened a lot with the word mission attached to it, with the word evangelism. It's really hard to be in an afflicted situation and have people tell you, come and preach to you, that you're also going to be afflicted in the afterlife if you don't join their group and say that prayer or go to their church, be part of their programs, do all that stuff. I get eternity and those concerns and those, I get that there are important things that need to be said and preached and persuaded so that we can think well and that we can live well. But in this scenario, this has been abused quite a bit in history. I mean, tomorrow we're going to wrestle online about Columbus Day and Indigenous Peoples Day. And this is surrounding days like that, surrounding history lessons like that. And that's just one of many ways that the Christian good news has been commandeered to offer afflicting news and afflicting scenarios and afflicting circumstances and people who are already afflicted. Not to end on a Debbie Downer note, but those are my overgeneralized observations of why I think maybe when I said the words evangelism this morning, you didn't have the same pitter-patter in your heart that you had when you held that person in your mind who gave you hope. What if we could go back to when the word evangelism, euangelion, was more like what you felt when you imagined that person or those people who gave you hope when you thought there was no more? And what if we, probably the comfortable, could join with the afflicted in gospelizing? What if we could befriend and stand with and journey with in friendship with the afflicted, the comfortable and afflicted in community together? And that could be an embodiment of the good news that there is hope in this world. Despite what all of our feed says, despite what everything around us is saying, that hope is lost, that we will just continue to afflict in this world, what if we could be lights of good news? I want to leave you with a quote that I often read at the end of every school year at George Fox, because it's called George Fox, and I just want them to remember that was an actual dude, and he said some things, and he made a journal, and you should read it, and he was an interesting guy. At the end of the school year, I always read this quote of his to students when we're commissioning them, because I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater with this word euangelion and the word mission. I just want to clean the bathwater out, because I think there is some hope to offer people. So for our time of waiting worship, maybe let this quote wash over you, and you can hold it as you hold that the people and the persons in your life that have brought you hope. This is the word of the Lord God to you all, a charge to you all in the presence of the living God. Be patterns. Be examples in all countries, places, islands, nations, wherever you come, that your life and conduct may preach among all sorts of people and to them. Then you will come to walk cheerfully over the world, answering that of God in everyone, whereby in them you may be a blessing, and make the witness of God in them to bless you. Then to the Lord God you shall be a sweet savor and a blessing.